This year, again, as we have for the last several years, in preparation for Christmas, everyone in our extended family has agreed to put together a wish list on Amazon.com. A few clicks of the mouse and all your wishes and deepest desires can be made known to the world, or at least to those that you invite to view your list. No more wondering about what to get your niece in California who just turned 17. No more returns, no more unwanted gifts, no more wrong sizes. My favorite feature of the Amazon wish list is the universal wish list button. Yes, there really is such a thing, the universal wish list button. This most powerful tool allows you to install a button right on the toolbar of your web browser, and you just click on the button as you are surfing the web, and a window pops up, inviting you to add the item, whatever it is, to your wish list. When you add an item to your wish list, you can even include some comments about the size that you need, or maybe the color of the item you prefer, or other instructions that might help those who are trying to make your every wish come true. So just for fun, and out of curiosity, I used the universal wish list button the other day to wish for world peace. Not something you usually get at Christmas. So I Googled world peace, and I opened one of the first links that I saw, and then I hit the universal wish list button. Now, I'm not exactly sure why or how this works, but according to my Amazon wish list, you can give me the gift of world peace this Christmas for only $720. If only it were that easy, right? Of course, there is no price to put on peace. It is truly priceless. But it does seem that deep down, in one way or another, it's something that everyone, or nearly everyone, wishes they could have this Christmas. Peace in the world, peace in our families, peace in our cities and neighborhoods, peace among people of different races, different beliefs, different backgrounds, maybe especially peace within ourselves. Peace, especially this time of year, is priceless. In the midst of a consumer Christmas, we'd like to not be so caught up in the details, the purchases we need to make, the menus we need to prepare. We'd like to not be so hassled by the guilt, so stressed out. It's interesting that one of the fastest growing professions, especially among recent college graduates, is yoga instructor. Stress, apparently, is at an all-time high, and people are looking for ways to relax, to let it go, to feel better, to have some inner peace. And for some, yoga helps. And if you can become an instructor, then it can pay the bills, too. For many of us, however, peace remains a luxury item. We stay in a state of frantic busyness that distracts us and makes us feel like we're moving forward, accomplishing something, getting ahead. Our busyness keeps us from hoping while staving off hopelessness. And so in this season of Advent, we listen again to old words, old promises that inform our hope for peace. A peace that surpasses all understanding. Real peace. This is why it's good to take a breather from the Christmas carols bombarding us at the malls, so we can hear again the prophetic words and remember that this is a time for hope. Hoping that the promises of God will come true at last, that Isaiah's vision will be more than poetry, that it will become reality. It is a fragile hope, there's no doubt about it. But unless we hold on to that vision of peace and let it guide our lives, let it prompt our actions and our world and our outlook, we are truly hopeless. There have been many dreamers who have shared Isaiah's vision of a peaceful world. Many who have worked to promote peace and make peace possible, and who have challenged us to do the same. One of those visionaries was the 18th century artist Edward Hicks, who loved Isaiah's vision so much that he painted it more than 100 times. Take a look at the insert in your bulletin. Go ahead and pull it out. This is an example of one of Hicks's paintings of the peaceable kingdom. Notice the animals are always gathered in the foreground. Wolf and lamb, leopard and kid, calf and lion. You notice their wonderfully expressive faces, some looking almost human. You notice how large some of their eyes are. Are they simply startled, surprised, or is it more of a pleading sort of look, inviting us in, daring us to look away? The scene is miraculous, seemingly impossible, reminding us that our hopes for peace are often much too modest. Something that may be less well known about these paintings, however, is that off in the background, behind the animals with the big eyes, Hicks would paint another kind of scene, one much more rooted in history. There in the background, if you look closely, is William Penn negotiating a peace treaty with the Native Americans. Edward Hicks, after all, was a Quaker, a member of one of the so-called peace churches, which believed that pacifism was the only faithful response to the call of Jesus. No doubt this is why the words from Isaiah so captured Hicks's imagination in this time, even as they still capture our imagination today. The yearning for peace is timeless and universal. Everyone wants peace for themselves and for their children. Everyone wants to be prosperous and healthy and safe. For the Israelites, for Isaiah's people, this yearning for peace and well-being was all wrapped up in their hopefulness for the next king. They were always waiting for next year, always waiting for the next king, looking to him to bring light into their darkness, hoping he would usher in the long-awaited time of peace. At the beginning of each monarchy, the new king would deliver a sort of inaugural address in which he would promise all the things that involved peace. And there would be great hope, at least for a time. Yet though some were better than others, ultimately none of them lived up to expectations. All of them disappointed in the end. This was an experience Edward Hicks knew well as he continued to paint the idyllic vision of Isaiah. Art historians have discovered that his renderings of the peaceable kingdom changed over the years. As Hicks became more and more disappointed with the kings and the leaders of his age and the conflicts they waged, as he grew more and more disgusted with how worldly his Quaker brothers and sisters were becoming, as he saw his beloved society friends torn apart by divisions in their body, his painting of the peaceable kingdom began to disintegrate. The animals began to look old. The predators start to snarl and raise their claws. We understand that disappointment because there is something all too familiar about what happened to Edward Hicks over the years. The world is still very far from peace. Violence rages, nations threaten and posture. Our politics are often personal and ugly. Families continue to fall apart. People find comfort in alcohol and drugs or putting other people down. There is little peace in the world. The hope for peace has become the butt of a joke, the answer a Miss America contestant might give. No one seems to take peace seriously. But we are called by the Prince of Peace to be peacemakers, to be agents of reconciliation, to be witnesses to the kingdom of God, proclaimers of the good news of Jesus Christ. And so we return again each year around this time when the world is dark and the distractions are many to the words of Isaiah and his vision of peace, to Isaiah, who dares to go beyond mere platitudes as he paints a picture of despairing people, offering them a vision of a day of peace. Isaiah had the same longings that we do. He too had this longing for peace, like a man in the desert longs for water, like a starving man longs for bread. That is the way that Isaiah longed for peace. Isaiah lived through what has been called the first Holocaust of the Jews. It occurred between 740 and 700 BC. Five times during those 40 years, the Assyrian army, the vast and superior Assyrian army, stampeded through the hill country of Israel, wreaking terror and destruction wherever it went. Who could plant a field with any hope that it would survive to the harvest? Who would bear a child with confidence that she would reach maturity? It was a horrible 40 years, those years in which Isaiah lived. But in the midst of that, the prophet spoke. Even though the world has become a living nightmare, he said, even though there is no sign anywhere that peace will ever come, even though human greed and destructiveness are running rampant across the world, hear this. The promise of God is more powerful than the destructiveness of humanity. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid. Isaiah's words cut through all of our false bravado and remind us that we are, at our very core, God's embattled children who long to be gathered up and loved and told that we are safe, and that despite the pain and the loss and the anguish of this world, there is something better coming, that there is someone God is sending into the world. Many centuries later, that longing for peace, that yearning for a new kind of king, that almost forgotten vision of the peaceable kingdom began to stir once again. And we hear the first strains of that hope in the song of Zechariah, a man who had nearly lost hope, who had forgotten long ago about Isaiah's vision of peace. He and his wife were growing older. The hopes for a child had grown dim. When the angel came with the news that they would give birth to a son who would prepare the way for the Messiah, Zechariah struggled to believe the message. So he got to spend several months in silence, time spent praying and reflecting about what God's messenger had told him. So when his son was born and the time for naming came, Zechariah suddenly proclaimed, "His name is John." And before you knew it, Zechariah was up and singing. Blessed be the God of Israel, who comes to set us free, who visits and redeems us, who grants us victory. The prophets spoke of mercy, of freedom and release. God shall fulfill that promise and bring the people peace. In Zechariah's song, we get some amazing news. Our merciful God is about to act. And that's what Advent is about. Our waiting and hoping and trusting for God to tear open the heavens and come down to act, to set things right. And Zechariah sings of the day when God will give light to the people who were sitting in darkness. But that wasn't the only news. Zechariah also announced that God was going to lead us in the way of peace, no matter how many things get in the way. The God who can bring mountains and hills low and lift up valleys and make the rough places plain can also prepare the way inside of us, quieting our souls, stilling our fears, calming our anxieties. My prayer for you this Advent is that you will come to know the peace of Christ, the peace that surpasses all understanding. Because when that peace descends into your heart and reaches into your soul, amazing things can happen. Your life will be filled with energy and joy and passion for service in Christ's name. And how do you come to know such peace? Well, there's no 5-step plan that I can share with you this morning. because the work is God's to do and not ours. The last thing that we need to do is put more pressure on ourselves. Pressure to have the right kind of faith, to follow the plan, to pressure to be calm, pressure to be inspired, pressure to be at peace. God is already at work in the world and in us. There's nothing that we need to do. Nothing except to slow down and turn down the noise and let God do His thing. And so, my friends, as those who have been claimed by God's grace, as those who have been met this day by the Prince of Peace, whether we can perceive it or not, let us stand and join Zechariah in his song, confident that God's promises are for us too. Let us stand and sing.